When I was growing up, my mother had a few hard and fast rules about language that my younger sister and I had to obey. We were forbidden to ever say that we hated anyone or anything. And even more than that, if we said one mean or unkind thing about someone and she heard us, then we had to say three nice things about that person. My sister and I still kind of twitch about that, you know, because we like have this reflexive thing. You know, sometimes trying to find three nice things to say about your playground nemesis was like a worse punishment than losing TV for a week. And she wouldn't let us use words like idiot or stupid or even say shut up to someone. In fact, in my 40s, I'm not sure I've ever told anyone to ever shut up. It feels like a swear word in my mouth, like something dirty and disgusting. I'm not sure where my mother got this particular parenting strategy from of, you know, policing our language, but she is pretty in line with Jesus this morning. In this morning's gospel, you know, this is part of the Sermon on the Mount. So Jesus is teaching all of his followers, and he is on fire in his preaching. He's gone up on a mountain to gain some perspective, just like Moses had once done. And he's got a lot to say on how people ought to be treating each other, just as Moses had once done. Moses came down from that holy mountain with the Ten Commandments, which were to guide the people of God into being the beloved community of God. A community that was focused not on a moral code to guide yourself into righteousness, but one that was focused on taking care of the neighbor. A community that was so focused on protecting each other. Because let's, you know, be honest, we are sometimes too selfish for our own good and don't always treat each other the way that we should. Moses gives us God's law to build up the community. You know, that's that we needed to have more care and concern for our neighbor. You know, that's what Moses says when he comes down from the mountain. And that's basically what Moses is saying in this morning's gospel reading from Deuteronomy as he's standing on the edge of the promised land. You know, he urges the Israelites to choose actions that bring life to all of God's people and not actions that lead to death. Now, for the author of Matthew's gospel, Jesus is the new Moses. Now, Jesus has a crowd of newbies that are following him around and, you know, listening, memorizing all those sound bites. And he's got about 12 or so hardcore disciples that are hanging on his every word. And in last week's gospel, Jesus tells these followers that he has come not to abolish the law that Moses gave us, but instead to fulfill it. And Jesus' way of fulfilling the law is to actually push it a little bit further past what Moses' choice is to the Israelites, choose life or death. The choice of following Jesus isn't one about life or death because Jesus has come to save us and give us life. So then the choice with Jesus becomes, what kind of life are we living? You know, are you so focused on an individualistic moral code that you follow to help you achieve a certain kind of life you hope to live? Or are you focused on relationships with all of God's children? You know, which is a path that won't necessarily bring you a comfortable life, right? Because being in relationship with other people is often messy and difficult work. Jesus is pretty clear what God wants us to be focused on, right? Choosing the kingdom life in which our neighbor becomes our focus. Jesus' words this morning, you have heard that it was said, but I say to you, are all about choosing life. So what does this actually look like? Well, I stand before you as someone who is convicted of everything that Jesus has said. I've often chosen death. No, I haven't murdered anyone, but I have nearly killed several primary relationships in my life with ugly words. You know, words that I've said to family members, and even worse, words that I've said in the privacy of my home. And I've watched as anger has nearly killed a primary relationship of my daughters, Rachel and Sarah. It's damn hard work resuscitating a relationship that is nearly dead. And whatever is put in its place is never as good as what was first there. I've watched, sometimes in pleasure, as words I've hurled as knives have severed. And I've also been on the receiving end of insults and verbal attacks as abusive as fists. You know, I have wounds that will take longer to recover from than broken bones will to heal. And I know I'm not the only one here who both received and done those actions. You know, I am a divorced woman. So right there, that means that I have one primary relationship that can never be mended. My ex-husband and I, we do get along actually very well, but that's because we have chosen life for our daughter. It's not easy to, you know, set aside the wounds that I've received or the deeper wounds that I've inflicted, but for Claire, we have chosen to give her a life free of her parents hating each other. And I'm more than guilty of using flirting or fantastical thoughts to distract me from nurturing the life with my partner. The onslaught to committed relationships that comes from, you know, Facebook and instant messaging or chat rooms or sexting and TV love stories and flirting with greener grass. You know, it's never ending. And I know I'm not the only one who's experienced that in life. Jesus intensifies all of these laws because he knows that keeping the spirit of the law, like not literally killing somebody, isn't really the point of the law. The point is to choose life, to choose to nurture the relationships that you have. So yes, we aren't supposed to murder somebody. But even more than that, we need to guard against our anger, the way we use our words to wound, the insult of character assassination, which is kind of a socially acceptable violence. If we really want to be kingdom people, then we have to speak like one. And we have to challenge others who, in our hearing, don't use kingdom language. You know, from our elected officials to our coworkers or obnoxious family members or gym buddies, you know, all the way down to our children. Life is threatened when we use angry, mean, belittling words. You know, just this past week, I had an interesting Facebook interaction with a friend of mine, former coworker friend. I'm a Democrat. My husband's a Republican. Half my friends are Republican. The other half are Democrat or don't care. And this friend had posted on Facebook, you know, one of those little funny jokes that one side loves and the other side hates. And it was a picture of an outlet and a fork. And it said, don't want Trump to be your president? Insert fork here. Bam, he's not your president anymore. Now, I don't usually comment on things because I comment and then I delete, you know, back up. Because I think to myself, is what I'm going to say kind? Is what I'm going to say helpful? And if it doesn't fit those two things, then it's not something worth saying, right? But this time I did say something. Now I know sticking a fork in an outlet is not actually going to kill somebody, right? Might give you a kind of big shock. Maybe it would if you had a heart condition or something, but you know. So I commented to him and I said, you know, that's not funny. What, you know, essentially what you're saying is you wish that other side didn't exist, that they would die. And he said, oh, maybe not. And so we actually had a very friendly back and forth about this meme, about whether it was denigrating a whole group of people or not. And in the end, he took the post down. You know, he posts lots of political stuff. I don't comment on any of it. I have Democrat friends that post lots of political stuff. I don't comment on it. But when the purpose of the image is about hurting a group of people, or wishing that group of people wasn't around or didn't exist, that's not kingdom. That's not choosing life. You know, life is also threatened when women are objectified, which is the point of what Jesus is saying in this morning's gospel about divorce. You know, when women are merely the fulfillment of sexual desire or merely there for carrying on the family name. Life is threatened when women are consistently reduced to their ability to look culturally appropriate, right? To hit a societal standard of beauty, you know, to please their partner, to remain virtuously pure, and yet, you know, sexually desirable, and meek, and silent, and without voice. If we really want to be kingdom people, we cannot allow anyone to either objectify a woman or decide what constitutes being a woman. We have to raise our children and our grandchildren, our sons and our daughters, with this expectation, right? And we have to challenge any language and actions that undermine the dignity of any human being. Life is threatened, Jesus tells us, when we hold grudges and seek revenge on someone else. That's what he's talking about when he says we need to be reconciled to someone before we come to worship God. When we want to win and be right more than we want to be in relationship with another person, this leads to death. Death of interpersonal relationships, death of community. Jesus urges us to let go of the desire to be important and right about all things, and instead compromise and do the work of healing a broken world. In other words, Jesus is saying that the interpretation of the law is far more complex than we often make it out to be. And if that interpretation leads to death, to silencing voices, discounting the personhood of another people, disrespect and demeaning a whole group of people, then you have to think about what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. At the very start of his ministry, standing on the edge of God's kingdom, Jesus asks all of his followers, then and now, which do you choose, life or death?